Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
What is your happiest childhood memory?
I see what you're doing, concussion. My head's fine, doctor.
Humor me.
It's gotta be. My mother, she worked at an academy that trained pilots. They had this amazing simulator there, so one day I sneak out. I was about 8. I'm having the time of my life until alarms go off. I thought I broke this damn thing. Turns out I had. I broke the highest score of any cadet in history. So I climb out, and admirals and captains are there, jaws on the floor, seeing this 8-year-old kid. And my mom, she's looking at me, like, pretending to be angry, but I knew she was proud. And she said,
cool story.
You guys all ready? You guys all ready to talk Picard?
Oh, it's Picard. Yeah.
You ready to talk Picard?
Yeah.
All right. Jesse seems excited to talk Picard.
I forgot we were doing, I just, you know, it seems like one, we're just doing one podcast that's really long, but these two different episodes.
Two podcasts. This is the second episode
Now doing Picard.
Yes. Yeah. So this is okay. So this is Picard season 2.
You may have heard our discovery.
It's got Star Trek episode 123.
This is episode Picard season Picard season 2 episode 3. It's called Ass Sphincter Says What?
It says assimilation.
Ass Sphincter Says What?
Okay.
All right. Ass Sphincter Says What?
This is childish.
What?
Exactly.
This is very childish. Yeah. So assimilation, Picard, season 2, episode 3. We'll
Picardy
get to that.
Thirds.
Just a quick programming note that this
from
is
our
the,
sponsor.
This is the final week of us doing two episodes, publishing two episodes because there were two episodes of Star Trek on. And
this is the Star Trek voice.
So yeah. So
hello. There's news to be had.
If you'd like to
take in the news today,
hear our discussion of Star Trek Voyager's season 4 finale, we'll just load up your old feed, podcast feed, and crank it back one number.
Lock and load, baby.
This is episode 123.
We did that one. Crank it back minutes ago.
Crank it back to episode 122, and that's the episode. To which you should listen.
There's a bogey on your 6, lock and load.
If you're interested in our discussion of Star Trek Discovery season 4 finale. This, however,
there's an Alpha Tango at your 3, dumping chode.
Alpha Tango.
This, however, is a discussion of an episode that was directed by Leah Thompson of Back to the Future and Howard the Duck fame
and
Just Shoot Me.
She wasn't in Fast Times.
No, she wasn't.
Just Shoot Me.
Who was in Fast Times?
No, she was in the...
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
She was in that other show with the comic strip.
Yeah, the comic... Yeah,
Just Shoot Me?
Yeah.
No.
Caroline in the City.
Shoot Me. What am I thinking?
That was part of the... That was part of like the 90s where they had this...
That's like Confusing Emptiness for Golden Girls.
Confusing era.
Where it was very like very forgettable sitcoms, you know?
Yeah. But they we still watched them.
I don't know if I ever watched Caroline in the City.
Oh, I did. I liked that show.
I never saw an episode.
I watched a lot of Caroline in the City.
The other guy on it was funny. Yeah.
I watched Frasier, but that's just because I'm really smart.
Oh.
Yeah. I also watched all of Frasier for similar reasons, I think. No doubt, smart. For similar reasons. Yes, but okay. So we are discussing Picard's assimilation. The season is trucking right along. It's another banger of an episode.
Word.
What, trucking?
The way you said it, you were like, trucking right along. I thought that was like the title of the episode you're trying
Trip
to say. And I was like, that
third.
Doesn't sound like that.
I'm just, you know,
Trip Tucker the Third.
It's just, I'm putting a little verve into it. Verve. Some chutzpah.
You keep giving me that verb. We'll be playing a funeral dirge.
Okay. So what's the question I have? The question I have after three episodes of Picard season two is what's going on with the butterflies? We noticed the butterfly theme going on.
Well, she did mention something about butterflies, but
that was more like the butterfly effect.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, this is what I'm trying to get to, right? Yeah, this is what I'm trying to get at or get to.
I don't remember any other butterfly imagery.
Okay.
Am I missing something again? Yep. Just like last episode, I missed like them going back to 2024 in LA. I knew they were traveling through time. I knew they were going through LA.
They didn't actually transfer. They didn't go back in time yet.
Right, but they said they were going to 2024, yes. And for some reason I had it in my head that they said like 2240 or something. I thought they were going back to normal time, except in LA back then, and then you guys pointed out to me, it's like, no, they said 2024, yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, that's like modern day. And I, for some reason, I put the
Sanctuary
wrong,
district.
I put the wrong number in the wrong place.
DS9 past tense time.
So I'm trying to say that I sort of, like, my brain doesn't work well as it used to. Not that it works all well in the first place.
I have that problem.
Too. My brain doesn't work well as it used to.
I know what you're talking about.
So yeah. So...
We are getting older.
So, my point being is I missed it. I think I missed the butterfly imagery to which you were referring.
Now. For those who have missed the butterfly imagery, do not
delay. Don't delay.
No. Do not get too upset. Do not self-lambast yourself. Don't self-baste yourself.
No immolation.
Yeah, none of that. None of that is necessary.
Gasoline.
Because it has been subtle. And I would be a scheming little fraud if I claimed to have discovered this on my own. I discovered it through the benefit of the internet. And all the glorious people out there on the internet
talking,
with much better eyesight, much more time, frankly, to go frame by frame.
Yeah,
and
these people
and
have
these
jobs?
Things.
Did you ever notice?
It's like they don't have jobs.
Did you ever notice if you said subtle subtext, they both have S-U-B-T.
Yes, sub, as in beneath or below.
But subtle is not sub.
Like
subtle.
A submarine.
I think.
But when you say subtle,
no, subtle.
When you
subtle.
Say, but when you say subtle, it's not subtle. Bippy Rippin. What was it say? Bippy Rippin.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Ruppy Duppies. You know, on the Bob's Burger.
That man's got a subtle buttle.
He's a New Zealand guy. He's like Popple Ruppies. Bubble Ruppy.
They're fleeting all their veils.
He's like that fleeting kid them. That's Tina's age. So I was saying subtle, the word subtle.
Subtle bubble.
Bubble Ruppies. The subtle is not.
Rumpy pumpy.
It's
subtle. A little bit of rumpy bumpy.
It's not subtle. It's not below the toll.
Subtle.
That's what I'm saying is subtext is subtext. But beneath the text.
You've got a subtle butthole and the subtext of the butthole.
No, you're not listening. Look, they're both spelled...
Subtext.
Look, let me get my... Look, you'll be able to understand what I'm saying if you stop like talking and if you listen for a second to what I'm about to say.
I agree with the premise that the chances that I'll understand are increased
okay,
if I would stop interrupting.
Increased.
You.
Okay, well, I'll settle for that.
I cannot guarantee...
okay, yeah.
Full comprehension.
Okay, S-U-B-T...
Got it.
Subtle, subtext.
S-U-B-T.
And they're both subtle and subtext.
Yes.
But along with that, you say subtle, subtext. They both have to deal with stuff that's kind of like, ooh, sneaky.
Yes.
But subtext is beneath the text.
Yes.
But subtle is not subtle.
This
it's
is
not,
familiar ground that we're trotting.
It's not beneath the toll. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah.
Jesse,
so,
do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
The butterflies.
Well, as long as you see what I'm saying.
Earlier in the season, in episode one, on the La Serena, when it was under the command of Seven of Nine, boxes of medical supplies she's carrying have a butterfly logo.
Oh, that's right.
Now, that's point number one.
I used to work with a guy
two.
That always went,
Point number two.
Even when he didn't get it, he
you
thought he'd get
with
it.
The guy?
Yeah, every time he thought he figured it out, he'd go, that's it. And it turns out he didn't figure it out.
Was it a Bennigan's?
Point number two. Point number two. At Teresa's clinic, the logo on the walls, you see the logo a few places, the logo is a butterfly, a similar butterfly
Whose?
Logo. At Teresa. Teresa is the doctor
oh, the
who helps
yes, yeah.
Rios. Now, yeah. now. Teresa's clinic is called, what is it?
The Mariposa? Mariposa?
Yes, the clinic is Las Mariposas. Clinica Las Mariposas, uh-huh. which is like the clinic of the butterflies.
That's look at that. Spanish.
So it's named after yep. butterflies. Last season, there was a scene that I can't quite recall, but I barely recall, of Picard fiddling around with a butterfly, which I believe was a synth butterfly.
Oh yeah, he did have a synth fly.
Okay.
A synth butt fly.
He had a subtle buttle.
Subtle butts, bubble wrappies.
Subtle butthole.
Subtle
butthole.
Subtle subtext of butter, bubble wrappies.
Rumpy pumpy.
I didn't say that.
I did, though.
So,
butterflies.
Yeah.
Now, butterflies. God, butterflies.
This is taking forever.
No, herky jerky.
No, this is a long good. Journey we're taking.
This is not a long journey. This is a extremely erudite conversation about the Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 3, Assimilation. That's what this is right
if
here.
You
on the
say
It's Got
it,
Star
it will
Trek
be
podcast,
true.
Episode 123 of the It's Got
what do you
Star
think this
Trek
is
podcast.
The field of dreams? If you build it, they will come. If you say it, it'll be true. Is that what you're saying?
No, you're talking about that book that everyone in LA reads called like the Secret, where when you read the book, it just says think something and then it'll happen. It's sort of positive affirmation.
I know what you're talking about, but I wasn't referring to that.
Okay. The butterflies, right? Traditionally, the butterfly is a classic literary device to represent transformation or change or growth.
It's very subtle. Subtext.
you're just all about the subtle subtext today. Presumably,
butterfly tends to be synonymous with metamorphosis.
Metamorphosis, change, growth, I mean, all these themes. And presumably the association has something to do with those themes, both in Picard season one, it was much more overt because it was Picard turning into a synth. He was literally going through a metamorphosis.
He's a mechano man.
But they've retained that butterfly motif, and I'm sure I'm missing some. So write in and let us know at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or at It's Got Star Trek on the
no
on
one
the, on
suspects the,
Twitter, the
butterfly
on the Twitter or Instagram or whatever at It's Got Star Trek.
No one ever suspects the butterfly.
What's up with the butterflies? Is it just a metaphor? Probably. Is it something more? Maybe. Why is the logo so similar between Teresa's clinic and the medical supplies that were on the La Serena in the future?
It's one of those things when you're flipping around in time and, you know, Q's involved.
You go on Twitter and you at hashtag sci-fi butterfly.
Sci-fi butterfly.
No, oh, you're asking people to put that on the.
Internet? They at hashtag it.
Why would you at hashtags?
Because that's how you twite.
No, you don't at hashtag something.
When you twite something.
That's ridiculous. That's for email.
I apologize. I apologize for that.
Dermaline pads. You want some dermaline pads? Do you think those are some drug pads?
I'm not taking any fucking dermaline pads.
Okay.
So butterflies.
No, I'm done with the butterflies.
Okay, so
deposit of polonium.
Yeah, polonium. This never occurred to me, and it happens all the time since the dawn of Star Trek. But when they're all in the ship, and it really stood out to me because of the way the special effects worked in this episode at the beginning, when their ship was all zip zapping around and goes zoop de loop de doop and the floopy de boobs and stuff, when it's like
when they're trying to escape from the Confederation ships at the beginning?
Yeah, and they were flipping around and spinning and stuff. You know, they have the inertial dampers, right?
Or dampeners, depending
on what school of thought you're
See previous wanting. Episodes for that debate.
We should start a war over it. If you have the inertial, I'm going to say dampers. I'm not establishing which one's right. I just like saying damper. It's fun. So inertial dampers, it keeps you from flying around
Sounds
the ship,
like
right?
Hamper.
Like when you do this
peanut hamper.
When it does this, the inertial dampers is what allows you to stand still while the ship goes floop de doop de doo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And defy all that G force and centrifugal force.
Yeah, not like totally.
So how come sometimes when
it dampens the inertia?
So how come when they get hit with laser beams, it causes them to jerk? You know what I'm saying? Because they have the inertial dampers. If a ship gets hit with a laser beam,
sometimes those panels.
Because you know how if you're like in a car, right, and you run into something,
ooh, yeah.
you jerk forward because that's how momentum works, right? Yeah. But in Star Trek, because of the inertial dampers, they don't have that momentum. So how come when they get hit, how come they fly around when they get hit? You know what I'm saying?
I have a theory. I have a headcanon theory, and I don't know if it's something that other people subscribe to or not.
Mm-hmm.
But my theory is that it's a matter of attenuating the inertial dampeners such that if you turn them up too high, walking around feels super fucking weird and you don't like it.
So they have to give it some kind of weird
give. You want to have a little inertia. Mm-hmm. When you're walking, imagine walking around a galaxy class starship.
No inertia whatsoever.
A carpeted inertia. No. Imagine a lot of it. Yeah, exactly. No inertia or a lot of inertia.
Because inertia is gravity.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes from gravity.
It's objects in motion tend to stay in motion, right?
And yeah, so it's not. It's just
you're tossing
from,
a ball.
It's just from how things are.
Say you're Commander Riker and you got this alien kid who uses mind brain waves to pretend to be your kid in various hallucinations. Say that situation happens.
Wait,
and then,
did I miss a step here?
Well, that's an episode of The Next Generation where Riker believes he's got a son.
Oh, he's got that kid, yeah.
Got that crazy son. So
is that Elliot kid that Troy gives birth to?
No, that's an even more confusing story.
And that episode makes me feel weird.
But Riker beams the kid aboard, and before they get to the starbase that they're going to inevitably drop the kid off to be experimented on or whatever the Federation does, Riker wants to play ball with this kid, right? You want to play ball. You just want to play catch.
You're not my daddy.
If you got those inertial dampeners turned up too much to dampen too much of the inertia, that's going to fuck shit up.
I mean, Deep Space Nine is a no-go with General Sisko and his baseball.
You're
going to
punch a hole through somebody's fucking chest.
Yeah.
Do you think you can change the inertial dampers? You can localize the inertial dampers if you want. Probably
one presumes.
I don't know. I guess
I'm a dampener, man.
But I mean, you know, it still doesn't explain why consoles explode though. Why they didn't put a circuit breaker in.
And of course the classic question of the black rocks flying out of the console bits and then falling out of the ceiling. And they don't have circuit breakers.
carbon.
But yes, you gotta have a little drama.
But little drama. So Q mentioned the fear thing again. He says this is the only kind of life you understand. Shall we see what else has been lost in the wake of your fear? So this is totally like fear. We've talked about fear of his getting intimate. Fear, and then in this alternate universe, it's like that fear of intimacy is perverted itself into this offensive form of destroying before the fear even gets allowed to hit you. So he becomes this fascist.
Or the fear of telling Wesley that he ordered his Wesley's father to his death because he wanted to get frisky with Beverly Crusher.
Exactly, it's all fear, man. You got to be honest with yourself and others, because if you can't be
and
honest
others.
With yourself, who
that
can
he,
you be
that
honest
he is
with?
Wesley's father.
So Q is referring to this fear business again.
Q, we only see it for this brief moment. It's very interesting.
Yeah,
very
I mean, we didn't really
moment.
See him in the last
this
episode. Though,
a brief moment here.
You know, Raffi really, I thought Raffi knew Picard a little better. She's like, you and Q have been, I know she's upset, but she's like, you and Q have been plotting, playing this game all along.
Similar thing happened last season where Raffi is very quick to blame people for when she's
and
in
she
a situation that she doesn't have control over.
Yeah, that's true. She did begin the episode angry at Picard. I don't remember what point her and Eleanor became really close. I don't remember when
last
that happened.
Season they were.
Yeah, but like I didn't see the progression. When I saw them as close as they were this season, I was a little not surprised, but I was like, I don't remember him being like. You know,
and Raphael starts going off on Picard about like a failure in leadership.
Oh,
and I thought that was kind of unfair because like, okay, like last season we go through his sort of failure in leadership, but like this season that's not really the situation at all.
And doesn't she know it's only episode 3?
Yeah.
Come on, give the guy a break.
Like he didn't do anything wrong this time. He's just
I think they're very lucky to have this guy because Picard is as far as I'm concerned is being the rational one here.
Yeah.
Cuz everyone else is like, let's fucking murder all these people.
I know, right. Everyone's so quick to blast. They were blasting those Confederation dudes. They were turning into little sparks.
So, but I mean, so
little embers.
First season, it was talking about how sort of Starfleet and the Federation hadn't necessarily they kind of lost faith in Picard, but they also kind of treated him as he's getting old and not to be taken as seriously or something. Basically, he wasn't. They didn't treat him with the respect that they once
did.
But
he also wasn't being the Picard he used to be.
Yeah.
He sort of turned inward. That was the implication.
That
he had sort of retired to his chateau.
Right. And then he came back and demanded he went to the admiral and said like, hey, let's get a whole fleet of ships on this. And she's like, go fuck yourself, you know. but that was showing when you were talking about Raffi turning on Picard, because in the first season it was like all of Federation and all that, they didn't turn on him, but they were at odds, and it was his crew and his friends that they're the ones that stood by his side the whole time, right? Well, in this season, now his crew is starting to like turn on him a little bit. And they'll probably, I mean, I'm guessing it won't just end with Raffi because
Seven seemed pretty pissed off too, you know, about like she wasn't too happy about that situation too.
She's got a lot of Borg hanging.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I don't know how long it'll last because they're
yeah, it's hard to tell, but it seems like if there's certain themes they're keeping with
Seven's
like
got a cooler head.
And things seem to be working in the sense that they both have the same goal, right? There's an A plot and a B plot here that basically is what we're gonna discuss. And you know, you can pick whichever one you want, but I'm saying like, okay, the A plot is the LA away mission, and then the B plot is Picard with Jurati and the Borg Queen. I'm only calling it the B plot because it's, you know, a little bit more concise and a little bit more direct. But before we even get to that, right? First, my predictions from last week about how they were going to get away from the Confederation were sort of like, not particularly on point, sort of partly right. I had suggested maybe Soji would show up with, like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like an army
Soji.
Of androids
we
or something.
We still haven't seen Soji.
I guess
still
haven't seen her. Looks like Soji might not play a role. But, I mean, she would. Maybe that it's a half... Well, maybe they'll introduce her halfway through the season or something.
She is a synthetic, so yeah. That's a bit problematic.
But she didn't travel back in time with them. So
it would be cool. It would be, you know, like a cool, you know, it'd be a fun move if halfway through the season they were like, oh yeah, you forgot about her, you know, pull one of them things. Like I thought were going to do with the Klingons and Discovery, but
well, we
know,
at this stage we are not entirely sure. Are they going to spend the whole rest of the season in 2024 trying to solve this problem? Is that the thrust of the season, or are they going
to
come back after a few episodes and then have to deal with some other nonsense? I don't know.
Maybe they'll go back to some Robin Hood shit.
But Soji didn't show up. I had suggested that maybe the Borg Queen would help, but not. She didn't help in quite the way. I mean, I said she was going to gain control of the ship and help them out, which she did technically do in this episode. But I thought she was going to help them with the magistrate and his two goons. But they dispatched with the magistrate and his two goons, which seems like just good old fashioned Starfleet ass kicking.
Oh yeah,
where Seven was like, "Fuck you! I'm going to take your gun away and start shooting people."
So the Borg Queen, let's call her BQ for now. BQ,
Her Majesty.
She
just for now.
So
not in the future.
She did help them get away because somehow I wasn't clear on this. Somehow she made
in the future we're gonna call her Dolores.
They made the photon torpedoes or whatever they shot at those. First of all, it looked like they shot a Voyager ship or something. They had one of those fatties.
Yeah,
it was
like
fatty.
Like a Nova class.
It was like
a
fatty
ship. I
think
that was a Nova.
It was one of them fatties. Yeah. And so, but suddenly, when Rios lost control of his stuff, and suddenly two phaser torpedo things came out and blew up those other two ships, he was like,
"Photon torpedoes!"
They was like, "Whoa!" And I'm wondering, what is it that BQ was able to do that they couldn't normally do? Like,
some
did she
Borg
make
shit?
But well, yeah, what did she make the photon torpedoes more? Proton torpedoes more powerful. Did she aim it so well it went through their shields?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I don't understand.
Yeah,
what.
No, I think she was able to, by taking control of the ship,
better than the ship's computer could.
Yeah, I think that's the idea.
Yeah,
she's
Borg.
Borg
queen.
That's why she can do the time travel calculations. It's the same principle, right? Yeah. That there's still the limitations in the computers, even in this time period.
Well, she seems like a jerk, you know.
Well, she's a Borg,
and it makes me think that they were never interested in joining the Federation in the first place. You okay. know?
No, but you can still, they're still like, they need her to
they do need her.
They need her.
Yeah, they need her.
You can call her an ally. You can call her a useful ally.
Yeah, they need her. And that's part
she's
of,
she's serving a function.
Right. And that's part of the drama is that they need her and it's bringing up this
and
whole
this is the good drama.
But
this is the good drama, right? Because she is a known character who's all fucked up and we know to be, she's an antagonist. But now she's in a position where we can benefit her and she can benefit us.
Agreed.
I mean, but, us as in the Starfleet. But, I'm self-identifying with Captain Picard and his friends.
That's allowed.
Yeah, because he was saying how the Borg could be a useful ally. And it's
right,
true.
Yes.
Because we know that there's so much worse crap out in the galaxy besides just the Borg.
Okay, so the Borg
it's like
could
a traveler.
It makes for good drama now because you know they need her and she's like not trustworthy or whatever. But then going back to the first episode where the Borg where BQ was attacking, and we were wondering, well,
BQ.
Is BQ really? Are they really attacking? Or do they? Because the Borg said they wanted to join the Federation. Yeah. Then it looked like they double-crossed.
No doubt the conclusion of this season is Picard is supposed to come back and be like, we'll let you do whatever you want. and we'll make peace with the Borg.
So you think they're gonna make peace with the Borg by the end?
I think at least one.
Even though the Borg Queen is being treacherous,
Borg Queen is being treacherous. That other one, I don't think is being treacherous, and I have no doubt that there are going to be all sorts of clever ins and outs and doodads and wheeze waz and all
and
that
lifty
stuff.
Lifty zoobs
in between now and then. But presumably, one of,
Chronic
if not
chumbo.
The main lessons, is going to be find a way to make peace with your mortal enemy, because you may, in order to move forward, you may have
so
to make
this
peace
is
with
all
your mortal
so then this is all about the time that they were going to plant a virus, a computer virus, in the Borg. It's going to come back to that somehow. No,
it's not. But
it has nothing to do with that. Right. It's not even in the same time period.
All right, let's take a quick break. It's time to take a break. And then when we come back, we will continue talking about this particular episode of Star Trek Picard. All right, we'll be right back. All right, bye-bye. Okay, we're back.
Okay, I think it's reasonable for you to say that it's definitely going to end up with some... You don't think it's going to end with just the Borg being like, we're going to kill you because we are monsters. That's how the Borg
From
talks.
A literary sense, this is what they've set up. They've set up this scenario...
From a literary
which,
sense.
And not just this season, but the collective, what they're building on the collective history.
The collective?
The collective.
Oh my God, it was an accidental pun. I apologize. I have a purposeful one
Son
later.
Son of a bitch.
I have a purposeful pun later.
Purposeful but, pun.
But yes, so to me, from a literary sense, this is what makes sense. The history of the Borg, Picard in particular's history with the Borg, Q showing up and saying he has to learn some lesson.
If this is really TNG-style Star Trek wrapping itself up, then it would make sense for the Borg thing to...
And it would make sense for the lesson to be that...
The Borg were a huge part of that show.
That you have to find a way to evolve and make peace with people who were once your mortal enemies, you know?
Mortal.
And there wouldn't be... Q is the one that introduced the Borg to the Federation. The
yes,
Federation
he
to the
is.
Borg.
That's right. There's also the other possibility that's been floating around out there, that this whole going back in time thing, it's being portrayed as Q has gone back in time and changed something, and now Picard and crew have to go back and fix it and make it so that thing doesn't happen so that they get back to their normal happy future. Okay. The other possibility, however... is that they pull the old switcheroo on us, and it turns out that the original, quote-unquote, original timeline is the Confederation, and that all the fun, happy, wonderful Star Trek timelines we have is a result of a change that was made.
Whoa!
Exactly. This is another idea that I did not come up with on my own. I read it on the internet.
Whoa! Dude, bro.
But that is a possibility as well. There's a few different things that are possible.
Whoa!
Yes, I know. Your mind is literally fucking blown.
But what about the mirror universe?
Oh, no.
Oh, don't even worry about it.
Don't even worry about that one.
No, I know.
Forget about it.
TNG doesn't do mirror universe.
But yeah, okay. So let's start. Like, before we get into the A and B plots, the very beginning, they fight off the magistrate and his people. And then they do some time travel stuff. And in all that, first of all, there's that fucking Borg Queen torso scuttling
around. Yeah, there was some space horror shit.
It was fucked up.
That was some body horror, space horror shit. That was pretty fucked up.
That wasn't that bad.
Leah Thompson did an amazing job directing this episode because I thought this was just a really well organized episode, well paced, and the shot decisions they made. That Borg Queen one was one that really particularly stood out to me.
I thought that was cool.
Like scooting out from behind one of those.
Yeah, and then it gets all connected up. I was thinking about how I like the design of the Serena Bridge, because it's kind of weird. It's on the second floor of this thing, and it's set up like stadium seating at a movie theater.
Because it's like a cargo.
Really, if you had really steep stadium seating with like a low hanging balcony or something, and then the screen. Yeah, I just thought it was kind of neat. It was kind of a neat style design. Because all the same kind of dealios. The other ones are more set up like a theater, like a stage. But this one was. Still has a stage.
A theater.
It's I don't know. A theater. You know what I'm saying.
I like the Star Trek IV style.
Well, no,
time
we
travel.
Actually don't, Dan. Can you please finish? No, I can't because I lost my thought.
Oh, I thought you were done.
Theaters were originally for pagan religious rituals.
Wait, you guys, what? Fears for pagans?
Theater is a pagan thing. And I was commenting on the Star Trek IV style time travel, and not specifically just the method, because it was a method that they used in Star Trek IV and in a couple of TOS episodes.
Did they go
episodes.
Warp 9.5 around it like they did here?
Yeah, like 9.99, you know, warp around a sun.
9.5, what is that?
But what was cool was is they, half a warp. They did half, they did, they went, they did Star Trek IV style, like glowing happy faces and sparkly stuff. Yeah. It didn't go into what they didn't do is the Star Trek IV proto CGI acid trip CGI whales and heads floating around. And some
right. They didn't do that, but they still had the, it still had that same kind of vibe of like,
yeah,
you're going back in time in Star Trek. Like,
it was pretty cool.
Because it all like stopped and then like started, it looked like things were reversing sort of.
Reversing. And of course, in this whole incident, Elnor is shot. For some reason, he's not vaporized like the other people, but he's
vaporized. What?
You couldn't
no, he's not vaporized.
You wouldn't see his green blood.
Oh,
he was shot with the same weapons as the other
that's
people.
That's a good point.
He
didn't he didn't explode into a blood powder. Yeah,
it was mildly embers. Confusing because he wasn't vaporized, which is great. It's good that he wasn't vaporized. On the other hand, he was shot in the shoulder, and you think, oh, that's okay. He was shot in the shoulder, but then apparently being shot in the shoulder is bad news in this particular scenario because he ended up dying.
Typically, that's not that bad.
So
maybe they hit an artery.
Not that I'm an expert.
That's what happens is if you hit
an
artery.
Yeah, but they put the dermaplast. What was it? Dermaplast? Shit, yeah. Is that what they call it? Dermaplast?
Dermine pad? Dermaline. Dermaline.
His
dermaline.
He's a fucking Romulan. How do you know where his fucking artery is?
I don't know. They know. They know.
They got to be in a reasonable
it's probably
spot.
It's probably part of basic
there was a lot
xenobiology.
There was a lot of green blood.
It's part of xenobiology, so don't be xenophobic.
It's got to be in some sort of reasonable spot, I'm sure. I'm sure.
There was a lot of green blood.
My balls are in my knee. They're in my knee.
All right, fair point. All right, touche. Touche.
We did that one already.
We did Star Trek VI. That was a long time ago. Look it up in the old feed. Scroll back a ways.
So...
Or go to the website. Go to itsgotstartrek.com and you can click on movies. It's the only movie we've done, so you'll find it real easy. It'll be right there.
So Elnor gets shot, and that's, you know, I guess they just didn't know what to do with him this season.
Well, no, so. they were setting up some sort of motivation, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, obviously, but
Elnor,
it's just more suffering
this,
for Raffi.
This pissed off a lot of people, by the way.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is like they chose Elnor to make the stakes high, but then you're cutting out Elnor, and I guess they figured they did all they could with Elnor, but you're saying they could have explored some people.
I'm not
do
saying
people
nothing.
Just want to see this guy that fucking... chops people's heads off and shit? Like, because that dude is so violent.
I really like Elnor. I'm sad that it looks like, at least for the time being, we're not going to be seeing Elnor. Elnor could be revived.
And him and Raffi had a good relationship.
They do. And I can see them wanting to have some more emotional motivation for people to go there. Now, maybe in Star Trek you don't need that. Maybe people could just want to do the mission and save the whole universe, the whole timeline. It may not be a necessary thing to do. On the other hand, we don't know what they're going to be doing with it, because it could be that Elnor comes back to life once they fix the timeline. It could be he's revived in some other way. It could be the Borg Queen fucking his, you know, put some nanites in him and he becomes a half Borg person. And then that's a whole thing where
that'd be crazy.
Picard has to deal with his
those shenanigans.
Effective, you know, surrogate grandchild.
That old gag.
But they've kind of done that before.
Picard's number one.
They did that with Icheb and Seven. And stuff, so, you know, I don't know if that's something they would bother doing. But yeah, I can understand why people were upset by this. It didn't bother me too much, other than the sadness at the prospect that we won't get to hang out with Elnor much.
Yeah, that was
I do like his character quite a bit.
He's a fun guy.
But we'll see. Maybe they make it worth it.
But yeah, maybe there just wasn't really any more to explore about his character.
By the end of the
maybe
season,
they thought
we'll know.
And maybe they thought it'd be more interesting for Raffi's character if he died, because this is sort of like planting the seeds of her sort of turning against Picard. And maybe it doesn't go anywhere, but maybe it does over the course.
It's
like,
just more,
his crew
it's more
turns
suffering
on him
for Raffi. Just like, why are they going through all this just to make Raffi more pissed off?
Just so she gets mad. So she gets mad at Picard and forces.
Mad at Picard.
So and forces him to face whatever kind of shit he's going through in his self. I guess I don't know.
I mean, to me, it didn't hit that hard, because if I were in Picard's position, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I get why she's angry, but you know, I'm not gonna worry about that, because like
there's a bigger mission.
It was a little fucked up though that Picard. You know, he had no problem letting Elnor, well, I'm sure he had a problem, but he didn't hesitate. He's like, nope,
Eleanor's got to go. We got to keep her alive. But then Girardi had a solution just to go in, and he didn't even want to risk the possibility of like her going in. So he did all this work and sacrificed Eleanor and did all this shit. And you could argue, of course, that it was that he made the right decision and all that. But then when he starts getting all sensitive about Girardi, it's kind of like, well, dude, you've done all this. There's no reason for you to hold back now. Like, we got our...
To me, where there's a difference, and what I really loved about... And we can talk about this whole B-plot with Girardi and Picard hanging out with the Borg Queen.
Oh, yeah, that's... I don't even know what's really
going on. No pun intended, hanging out. No pun intended, hanging out with the Borg Queen.
Are you talking about because she has no body?
She's hanging.
Because she's all hanging up there?
In stasis.
Yeah, I didn't get
hanging
that.
Hanging out, no pun intended.
I felt she was more strapped in.
No, she was clearly hanging.
She was dangling.
She was hanging and dangling.
I taught her how to dangle.
First of all, Alison Pill, yet another chance for her to just demonstrate her acting chops. She did such a wonderful job with this whole scene here. But Patrick Stewart, also the anguish on his face... The reason why I disagree with you a bit, Dan, is that for him, he knows what it's like to be assimilated. And now we already have that pre-existing understanding that Picard is freaked out about the idea of people being assimilated. In First Contact, he straight up murders crew people while they're in the process of being assimilated because he's like, fuck that. They don't want to, I'm putting them out of their misery, right? Here we learn like a cool piece of lore that I don't think we knew before about the Borg assimilation process, where Picard refers to it being a sort of euphoria.
That's what, right. I was noticing that's never been mentioned before, and it seems totally awesome to be a Borg, but Seven is all, she's all traumatized by it, but it sounds like it was all, you know, heroin and roses.
I don't think it was that bad.
You think Seven's being dishonest about her trauma?
Well, no.
I think it's a separation. Yeah, it's a separation.
I think it's the same thing as
separation from the collective.
Look, I really honestly think it's intended to be sort of an analogy to an addiction to opioids or something like that.
Well, yeah,
opioids. In the sense that you feel the euphoria, but if you feel euphoria all the time, you basically become a zombie. It's a useless feeling in the sense, because in order for it to have any real meaning, there has to be a relative difference, right?
Yeah, that's why
you can't be happy without being sad.
Right. That's why heaven seems boring, because somehow we're supposed to believe in this static sort of perfect existence, but how can anything be perfect and enjoyable?
Because
there's no difference. There's no change. There's nothing. There's no change in current. You know, like when you hang off a wire, you don't get electrocuted. But if you touch the wire and then you ground it, that's when you get zapped, because it's the difference in the current or whatever.
I mean, that's a good example. I was going to say having a party. Like, a party is no fun if you have a party every day. Well, I think they have that in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy about the party that never ends.
Right,
it just gets boring.
Yeah, it's the same principle.
It's like the restaurant at the end of the universe.
It's the same principle, though, of like any kind of change drives our emotions and what we're feeling.
It's what drives life. Like, fundamentally, at a chemical level, it is differentials that drive the biochemistry
and
of
which
life,
is why,
and it drives our culture, drives the process of being alive and living a human life.
Which is why perfection seems like such a... I mean, who argue? You can't really argue about perfection, whatever. Because
no, you're right. I know. You're going to say it would be stupid, and I agree.
It would be because
stupid.
It's the same
suck.
All the
it
time.
It would be horrifying. It would be a horrifying mindless.
But the conceit there, I guess, is like, well, somehow it surpasses that. It's like, no, it's one thing all the fucking time. That's boring. But,
exactly.
But my stupid human brain, I guess, can't. Anyways, what were we talking about? We're talking about
Star Trek.
About euphoric. Oh yeah,
Borg's not that bad.
And so, Jesse, you said that leaving the collective is what fucked Seven up. You were saying,
well,
like,
right,
why is Seven all traumatized?
Like, well,
because you're not a part of it anymore. So there's a withdrawal.
Not a part of it, and they totally like went.
And everyone hates her.
They
now.
Went all yes. in like showing her what it was to be human and to embrace her humanity and to go back to being human. That was like the whole thing on what was going on in Voyager.
Yeah.
Like, and literally, to be human, you have to have some sort of angst going on, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the fucking point, right?
Right, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And so to me, the Picard, because I know where you're coming from in terms of Elnor had to be sacrificed, or the risk of sacrificing him was worth it because of the importance of the Borg Queen to the mission. But in with the Girardi thing, Now Girardi is voluntarily super, super overconfident, or like seems to be overconfident about this whole like plan about getting assimilated. And Picard has his own personal anguish about that. He probably has mission concern about that. Like, is this even going to work? She's just saying it's going to work. He's familiar with how strong the Borg Queen can be. And he's probably got some hope in the back of his mind that he can just like talk to her or some shit and get the information he needs. But the added anguish, which was so well portrayed by Patrick Stewart, is that as Girardi's talking, Picard is also realizing she's absolutely right. It's why not try it? It's a reasonable thing to try, given the people involved and the situation, right? So he's got that anguish with, he knows it's the right thing to let her try it, but he doesn't want to let somebody voluntarily
be assimilated.
She's really
qualified. She's the most qualified person to do that.
And yeah, she seems to be all overconfident at first. And then it turns out, no, she's a total badass about it. She totally like swiped the information. She didn't just like learn the information.
She's from the friggin' Daystrom.
She stole it from fucking the Borg Queen's brain. Took it out of her brain.
There was a reference to Spot. Because she goes, if anything goes bad, you'll be the first to hear about it. That and how much I miss my grade school cat. Yeah. So it's like some backstory as to why she has spot 73, as if there's been 72 that she's tried before that. I don't know. But there, I like the dropping the little breadcrumbs around there. But okay, so she goes into this conversation then with this Borg. This whole scene, I don't have a problem with this scene. It was just, I didn't really understand what was happening. It's like, I got what they were doing, basically.
Have you seen the movie Sneakers?
Yes.
Where they like hack into stuff?
I've seen Dan Aykroyd hacks into Sneakers.
It's like that. It's like when Dan Aykroyd's like hacking
into
Have you seen the movie Hackers?
Okay.
It's not exactly like that, because that movie's kind of ridiculous.
Let me qualify what I'm saying. I get what was happening, but if you think too hard about it,
have you seen The English Patient?
If this whole scene where she's when she's talking to the Borg, when Girardi's talking to the Borg Queen behind the scenes, the BQ, and you know, you're left to believe, oh, there's doing some, yes, I get what they're doing. But if I think about it too hard, the logistics, it just doesn't really make a lot of sense what's going on.
Because the Borg Queen should be squirting nanites into Girardi's body.
So Girardi's subconscious is separated from the Borg Queen. The Borg Queen only has access to Girardi's consciousness, and somehow that keeps her safe. It's like, oh, you can run rampant on my consciousness, but my subconscious is over here, so that means I'm safe.
Yeah, this is all.
And this is all presuming. And this is all presuming that there's a defined line that separates this consciousness from the subconsciousness. You know, that's
this all makes sense in terms of literary physics. Yeah. Literary physics. This is all.
Okay,
reasonable.
Yeah, I need to take more, I only took a 101, I think I need to take a...
You need to take 102?
102.
Where they talk about literary physics, where your subconscious can talk, as long as it's cool, it's okay.
Yeah,
because it was pretty cool.
But I want to stress that I really didn't have a problem with it. I was just trying to say that it's like, okay, that's an interesting choice, I guess they made.
To me, it's all worth it for the scene where Picard's like, whose arm is this? It's like, it's mine. You know, with the Borg Queen and Girardi.
Yeah, I know that was. Yeah, that was good.
And Girardi was talking about going into different rooms. Like sadness room.
She goes.
Humor room.
Yeah, she goes. She starts like talking shit to Picard, and then she's like, "Oh, new room," and this is supposed to move on. Picard's like,
and then she goes, did a "Great job!" Like I said, great job.
And the Borg Queen sounds like Girardi, like, you know,
it's
at
like
that one point, yeah.
It sounds like the Borg Queen and Girardi's voice got overlaid on top of each other or something like that. And she gained Girardi's sassiness. Did you notice? The Borg Queen became sassy.
It's always great when actors imitate just other actors.
I bet that was actually Girardi's voice,
It's always cool.
That was probably Girardi. That was probably Alison Pill's voice, but I guess it would have been the Borg Queen the Borg Queen acting like Alison Pill, because she took on her mannerisms as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It was an emotional roller coaster, because you think she's overconfident, and then everything looks like it's going bad for her, and then in the end it's all awesome.
Okay.
And then even after that, when the Borg Queen is trying to like make these demands, it's like, listen, like, You got to give me this and this, and then Agnes is always like, well, she's like, well, like, wait a minute, I already know that stuff.
So to my understanding is they were somehow living in the same mental space. They were kind of crawling around each other in their brains.
Yeah.
And
what Facebook calls Meta.
Meta. Like
Metaverse.
The, at one point, BQ was rattling at the door of sadness, which was just like, yeah, oh my God. The delivery is saying, like, oh man. She looks so upset.
She's like, what if I'm here, stuck here forever?
Yeah. Oh man.
I just don't want to even go on anymore.
But somehow she ends up stealing she doesn't just discover the Borg's thoughts.
She takes them
out. She takes them.
Yes.
If you interrogate somebody, you don't take their thoughts out of their head. You just learn what they know. But in this case, she like was like a little like, you know, cat burglar and came in and
another cat reference. Cat.
She's a sneaky cat. I'm a sexy cat. I'm a cat. Sorry, that was a...
Is that Nicolas Cage?
That was a Community. Abed doing...
Oh, Abed doing Nicolas Cage
on Community.
Yeah.
I'm a sexy cat. Yeah.
That's a deep cut right there.
Deep cut. I'll cut you deep, Mr. Bonersore. So she stole the thought, which was interesting. And that's the whole thing. Just thinking about it, I'm like, I don't even know how any of this works, but I don't really care because... In the good way, I don't care. I'm not like.
Did she figure out the time as well?
I didn't.
No, I don't think she quite got the time.
That seemed like ambiguous. Yeah,
that she's got the coordinates, but she didn't know the time when it was going to happen.
Okay,
but
so
she said she was close.
The coordinates of the watcher.
Right. So when I was mentioning before about how that scene was, even though I didn't get all of it, it was fun and I liked it and it was neat and there was no problems with all I was able to suspend, you know, my disbelief or whatever. I thought it was cool. But then, yeah, you could tell at the end when they went to they got the where, but not the when.
Not the when.
Not the when. And then she goes, it'll come to me, which is kind of like the convenient thing they did in last episode when how the Borg Queen was able to find that there's this person, there's this entity called the Watcher.
Ma'am.
And the Watcher is going to lead you to the rift or the time split. But for some reason, the BQ couldn't calculate the actual point.
BQ
couldn't calculate the actual rift in time or this fork in time. Remember last episode, she couldn't locate the exact fork in time, but she could be like, but go to this watcher. This watcher will tell you all about what to do. And it seemed like kind of convenient for the plot. It's like you can calculate that, but not this.
Some dungeon master business.
Maybe, yeah. And that's kind of like what Girardi did when she's like, oh, it'll come to me.
Yeah.
I'll remember it.
Yeah.
And then Picard straight up goes, he goes, I think you should be as far away from her as possible, talking to Girardi about the Borg Queen. And Girardi's like, she knows more. And then Picard goes, yeah, in due time. So it was just like kind of spelling it out. It's going to happen. You'll learn it later. Don't worry about it.
What if the Watcher is like Ron Howard?
All right. Well, okay. Well, let's take another quick break.
Good question.
And when we come back, we'll talk about just who we think the Watcher might be. And we'll also discuss the A-plot, the away team to L.A. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. We're back from that break. And what were you? Oh, yeah. The Watcher.
Ron Howard.
Let's save the Watcher for the end. Who we think the Watcher might be, because that could be some fun speculation. Because I just want to make sure we get through some of the key points on
could be anybody.
On the away mission to L.A. First of all, I just liked, at a baseline, I like the idea that their transporter, you know, you always have in a situation where the ship's transporters aren't working properly or hobbled in some way. I like the idea that they can transport them, but that the sort of like rotational computer, which presumably I mean the computer that accounts for the rotation and orbit change of the Earth, is malfunctioning, which is why Raffi and Seven and Rios all beam into slightly different areas. And
why didn't they just beam like outside of the ship?
Well, because they needed to get to LA. The constructed setup they provided us is that they have to get to LA and they have like one beaming to do. They can't beam them back. They said they can have a one-way beam, which implied it was like one-time beaming. So I guess they figured, let's get them to L.A. as quick as possible to find the fucking Watcher.
But it's like, do you think those ships even have, like, doors on them? Or is the only way to get on them by beaming?
I presume. They gotta have doors, right? You gotta have hatches. You gotta have doors.
Even elevator buildings have stairways.
Stairway? You keep saying
stairway. Yeah,
disturbing.
No, I don't.
You said something funny about elevators.
Elevators?
13th floor.
Elevators?
Elevators.
Was it just elevators?
So...
Although it is fucked up that Rhea's.
So, okay, so I was going to say that.
Rhea's falls right. from like the third floor.
So that.
Yeah, that like.
That scene was weird.
He should have like had his teeth.
Did you dig the music,
though.
The California Dreamin'? I was digging that music.
I actually, I hate to admit that I kind of like that music.
It's funny because it's like totally that like.
Version of it.
Yeah. What would be happening nowadays where somebody would take an older song and make it sound like that?
I think
that's
it's.
Totally like. Captures the spirit
and most of the most
really 2024
and,
style.
Right, that does most of the time it's unnecessary when you do that, but I didn't really like that. I like that original song fine, but there's something about it, it's got creep me out vibes.
Oh, the original version of it's California creepy. Dreaming is a creepy song.
Yeah, it is. And so maybe
so
I just
covers
like
are much better.
It's a creepy band.
So
those people were
the,
fucked.
That Rio scene, it was a bizarre scene because
it was basically a record scratch without the record.
Yeah, the
scratch.
Music cuts. Yeah. So my brain, like, first impulse was to process it like it was like a slapstick comedy beat thing. I was like, oh, this is the funny part where he falls on his face, and especially
and it kind of was,
and it was because a lot of comedy
and like blood is just oozing out of his
right.
mouth.
So a lot of comedy, a lot of comedies, you know, now get really into the idea of these brutal falls and playing for laughs, and they get up, they're like, oh, but then yeah, it goes up to his face. Everything's all like, oh, that's surprising and weird and kind of funny. My brain thinks it's funny, although I know it's not. And then there's a pool of blood below his mouth. And that kind of
blood.
It kind of reminded me.
Blood below his mouth.
It reminded me of the scene of the clown on stilts that fell over and got a concussion in Billy Madison.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Because and that was played like
a disturbing but funny.
Yeah, it's disturbing but funny. And that's what this kind of reminded me of. But it wasn't meant to be funny. But I don't think it was meant to be funny.
It might have been meant to be a little bit funny.
It was like it was
maybe it was that kind of funny where it's meant to be funny, but then meant to also make you feel bad for thinking it was funny.
It was confusing.
It was confusing. It was,
yeah, maybe. Yeah, you should. Real things. Yeah, real. These events have real repercussions, and people get fucked up.
Well, and by the way, when you think of it, right? We've got this season is already set up as sort of a riff on Star Trek IV in so many ways.
Yeah.
Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
Totes.
As we've already, they've used that time travel to come back to 2024.
Totes.
But the Rios falling season.
The season of Rios falling.
The Rios falling scene is sort of like an oblique reference to when Chekhov in Star Trek IV, when he's searching the nuclear vessels, and he is running from the military police, and he falls and hits his head and gets hospitalized.
And McCoy is so grumpy about being in the 20th century hospitals.
So obviously they're going in a different direction here, but there are hints of that flavor, you know, that flavor going on.
Hints of the flavor.
Hints of that flavor. And we also have hints of that Star Trek IV flavor in...
hints of that Star Trek IV flavor.
In Raffi and Seven's interactions with the security guard, where Seven of Nine, you know, Jerry Ryan doing a brilliant job here, talking about organic
she was,
photos.
Yeah, she was saying, first she started with capture an image, then she goes, we were hoping to recreate the cellular photograph.
Yeah, just say picture.
Yeah, right. Funner, and because like...
It's really the Kirk and Spock setup.
And they, and then they wanted, they the dude was all like, they're talking about being funner than Kevin.
I know.
It's like, I'm funner than Kevin. What,
like 2024, like you just, there's just no more proper English.
Well, and
that was a
funner is not a word.
Yeah, I know. Funner.
It's more
can
fun.
Borg even say stuff like that? Could Data say funner? Data couldn't even say it. Like he tried, he'd break.
You would think
he
that,
might be able to say funner. He just couldn't do contractions except when he could.
Even an ex-Borg right. would know that it's more fun.
Yeah, even an ex-Borg would know that.
Yeah. I mean, the grammatical side of my body was mildly upset by that.
So it was the...
but it was funny.
It was funny.
No, so that Seven...
It was funner.
Just like in the last episode when Seven said to the magistrate, her husband, it's like when she was basically like, well, I know what the plan is, but why don't you tell me what the plan is? You know, and obviously she didn't know what the plan was and she was trying that old gag. But she did. I liked it and it was funny and they pulled it off. And this one, they did the old gag of like, you know, saying words all funny in this weird, funny way. Yeah. But it pulled it off. It was really, it was really funny. It didn't come off as cheesy or weird to me at all. I thought it was really funny.
And the security guard was played by Matthew Kaminsky, who he previously played a crewman Cunningham on a few episodes of Enterprise. I think in the second season he showed up.
Oh, was,
I think twice
he
shows up.
Was he General Golevsky?
No, he was crewman Cunningham. Is this a joke?
Kaminsky? He was Golevsky?
Go
Kaminsky? Golevsky?
Yep, I don't get the joke because his name is Cunningham. Not
you said Kaminsky.
No, no. Oh, no, the actor's name is Matthew Kaminsky, like K A M.
He didn't play. He didn't play. Go out. Go leave. Go leave. Go out. Ski.
Go leave. Ski. You're modifying the joke.
Now. Fuck off. Ski.
okay. No, but it's just fun because, and he's not the only one, by the way. The Mr. Alvarez, who was the patient in Teresa's clinic, he was played by Marcelo Tuber, who was previously on TNG's season 4 episode Devil's Due.
Snap.
He played Acosta Jared. Devil's Due is one of the mildly crazy episodes of TNG.
It's TOS episode.
It is kind of like a TOS episode style episode in TNG. But so we've got at least
That one recently.
Yeah, a few folks, you know, playing new Star Trek roles, and I really like to see them do that, and I hope they keep doing that and do that even more.
A quick closed captioning note: when Seven said we were hoping to recreate the cellular photograph, closed captioning says, we wanted to recreate, not we were hoping, we wanted. And then the script I checked online, that was a transcript of the episode, also said what the closed captioning said. So it's obvious that script I found out, that quote-unquote script.
It's improv, baby.
That quote-unquote script I found online was just a copy of the closed captioning adapted for script reading.
Not necessarily obvious, because it could be that the closed captioning is based off of the scripts.
It's possible. But here's the thing. No, here's why I think
online transcription may be based off of the closed captioning, may be based off the script.
Okay, the map is not the territory.
Look, you make
although that's highly unlikely because scripts change on the day.
You make a good point, but here's my counter argument.
You're making me crazy.
There are a couple of times where they speak Spanish, and because they're speaking Spanish and it's presenting it to a predominantly English speaking American audience in America. And the Paramount Plus
United stuff, States
in the United
Canada,
States but
United Kingdom.
Anyways, so they put up the Australia, the Anglo-Saxon, Bermuda, Jamaica, Nigeria. Yes. They put up the captioning for is this a Kokomo joke? Are you about to say Jamaica off the floor?
No, I was not gonna make a Kokomo joke. You just made a Kokomo joke.
Bermuda, no, Jamaica. Ooh, sucks, I want to take it. Yeah, it does. Look, okay. So
Key West is the place to be anyway.
So look.
Key Largo's too close to the mainland.
Look, my fucking focus is focus. When they're speaking Spanish and they're what?
I was just gonna say Key Largo's fine. I don't want to say it's fine.
So
it's
when they're
as good as like
Key West. this bit. Oh God. Oh God, this bit.
Oh God, you devil.
Who's doing a bit?
Okay. So what I'm saying is that they were speaking Spanish and they put the captioning for English, but it wasn't the turn off and on closed captioning. It was just the natural captioning.
Now, when you have the captioning on, does it show the captioning over top of that?
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't.
So that's why I think it was from the closed captioning, because the closed captioning doesn't have the captioning of when they're speaking a different language and they translate it, because that's, you see what I'm saying? So so if you turn it on, it doesn't. You're already reading the English, so they don't put it a second time. So that's why I think the script was copying off the closed captioning, because it also didn't have those translated parts, or even in Spanish.
No, I understand the logic underlying your proposition. Okay. I'd have to examine it a little bit more closely, but I understand the logic.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I'm supportive.
That's all I ever wanted to say in my life. My whole life led up to this. It's all I ever wanted to say.
The doctor and the nurse were speaking in Spanish about Rios as if
he wasn't going to.
Yeah, that was what was that all about? They didn't think he could speak fucking Spanish. Well,
and they were all embarrassed
when he said his name was Cristobal. I thought they would figure out. That
I think it's a given.
He was all like, "My name's Chris,"
and she was giving him shit about classical guitar.
Right.
Like, come on. Like, why would you even bother, like, speaking Spanish? Like, he can speak
And they were looking all embarrassed when he could understand them, but all
they... think they were tittering and flirting? Was that what we were supposed to take
that's
away
what
from
we're,
that?
But here's what they said.
Yeah, we just didn't see
what, no, what they said was, once that guy is finished getting dressed, he should be gone. And then they laughed. I don't know why they laughed. I'm not really sure.
It's one of those
wasn't clear. And then he was there, and they were embarrassed as if they said something revealing about him being like really hot or something on all fronts.
They did take his clothes off while he was unconscious.
I don't know why they were embarrassed.
They put him in scrubs. Somebody did.
Like Marty McFly's mom.
They were laughing about him putting his clothes.
Yeah, maybe it's a Leah Thompson joke. that they undressed him.
Well,
and maybe it turns out that that's his grandmother. Or
Calvin Klein.
Whoa. Or great, you know, great, great, great grandmother.
It's like Lorenzo Music and Bill Murray in the Ghostbusters Garfield connection.
I was going to say it was more like Dr. Bashir in Trials and Tribulations. And Dr. Bashir tries to talk himself into
it. Was like H. John Benjamin when he had those tribbles and he was talking about eating tribbles.
Yeah. Or like when H. John Benjamin has a van.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's kind of like that as well.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. There are multiple. There are multiple implicit and explicit references to Seven being more comfortable, relaxed, and even more approachable.
Yeah.
Like when that child comes up to her in that scene that for some reason got me into tears briefly when the girl was all like, "Are you a superhero?"
Oh, yeah.
And Seven was all like, "Can you keep my secret?" and winked at her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Because you want to be that kid. You want to be that kid. It's like, "Oh, I want to be that kid.
I saw somebody beam in front of me like an angel."
And then she was able to flirt with that non Kevin guy who wasn't as fun as Kevin.
The security guard fella.
But like you see her looking in the mirror and she's all like, "I don't have any Borg parts."
Well,
and
clearly they're saying something. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know if what the message is going to be is that she has this lack of anxiety because of the lack of the Borg parts. And could that be physiological in that she just simply doesn't have them embedded in her nervous system anymore?
But people also do treat her because she was
talking. Is it more psychological because she just doesn't have shit on her face?
Yeah, but she did mention in the first episode, I believe it was the first, no, maybe it was the second episode, how people don't treat her. People treat her poorly because she.
But that's what I'm trying to get at. I'm kind of curious to see where they're going to go. They're going somewhere with this. I'm curious if they're going to go the more physiological or psychological route, or if it's some combination of the two, and exactly how that's going to play into the future. They're clearly making it seem like she fits in pretty well here into this 2024 time period. So, you know, some people have even suggested that maybe she'll want to actually stick around in this time period or something.
Yeah, that's kind of like at least it's going to be, or it's going to be one of those things where everyone goes back to the future and she goes, "Not me.
Back to the future.
I'm staying behind. I'm going to stand behind and take a picture of you.
But we're going, we don't need roads."
They'll work her into like the...
"Marty, you made it!" Sorry. It's the Libyans.
I don't think this is... Okay.
All right. It's Back to the Future. Leah Thompson.
I know.
That was... I kept thinking about how this was all about time travel, and I was like, Leah Thompson.
Yeah.
Leah Thompson. What's
November
the deal?
November 5th, 1955.
Did you notice how they did the whole the explanation of time to the audience? They did the whole that whole deal.
Well, where they
when they
talking about when Girardi was not sure, she was like, "I don't know if it's gonna fix it or not. We don't know if we're outside of the timeline."
But more in your face, Girardi was telling Rios that he couldn't take his phaser gun with him, and he's like, "Why not? You know, it's like, of course you can't take your phaser with you. It's 2024." And then she started talking about all the butterflies.
There's a whole Enterprise episode about that.
Yeah, right. And that's when she was talking about butterflies. In that instance, though, she meant butterfly effect.
Another butterfly reference.
Right.
But there's others in there.
But that was definitely because Girardi is kind of like the one that engages with the audience. So in that instance, she was basically explaining time travel. It's like, "Remember, everyone, he can't take his phasers
You think they would have done a little bit of research and replicated some kind of like phony ID looking thing, so everybody, you know. So
I guess their ship was without power. The excuse was all set up for them to rush out. Even their clothes that they took that looked kind of okay still looked weird because Teresa was like, "We washed your weird clothes.
Your weird clothes."
I mentioned though last season that Girardi kind of played the role, because there's often a role, and it's often in the form of the
audience surrogate,
the comic relief. But like it often comes in that form. But the audience I've never heard that term, but that makes sense. Sort of like the character that
he said that before
is connecting to the audience. But she also kind of did at the end of this episode when they were talking about with Picard and talking about like, "Oh, we'll find out in due time," and so Girardi's kind of like, "When are we gonna find out?" Like the audience were like, "When are we gonna find out?" And then Picard's like, "In due time." Mm-hmm. Girardi and Artians, who is watching this? I am Patrick Stewart,
dear old Patty Stewart,
Jean-Luc Picard. This is how I talk. Sorry.
Well done.
That was lame.
The cult clinic scene I really enjoyed. I thought it was fun, well acted.
I knew that kid was her son.
See, I didn't know that. That was good. You're more of a genius than I am.
I just got lucky on that one.
It makes perfect sense in retrospect. But that was all cute, the whole peanut butter thing, because on the one hand, Rios was clearly trying to play up how good the cookies were because he wanted to get his combat back.
That was really great.
But when he first bit into it, he was legitimately like, holy shit, this is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, he seemed like he was really, he seemed like he was into the real peanut butter.
And then there's the whole business, the depressing business with the ICE officers, the immigration officers. And what was interesting about that, right? Okay, so they go back to 2024. If you're a hardcore Star Trek fan, if you've watched all the series or at least Deep Space Nine, you'd know that 2024 is where they go back in time for the past tense two-parter with the sanctuary districts. In that case, they're in San Francisco, but it's the same concept. They refer to these sanctuary districts with where they basically are concentration camps for homeless people or for people who are living in poverty. And in LA, we see on the signs where Rafi shows up is a sanctuary district.
Oh, right.
And she's got, there's that, well, she's only there briefly, but there's that great scene where that guy tries to mug her and he's like, I'm going to hurt you. And she's like, huh? And she just kicks the shit out of him like in an instant, which was funny. With the ICE officers, with the sanctuary district, when Deep Space Nine was doing it, I think that episode was, I want to say 96, somewhere like that, 95, 96. They were imagining a few decades in the future. And now we're a couple years away from 2024. It's very similar to how Deep Space Nine portrayed it, except it doesn't seem unusual. Right, it does not. That ICE raid was not something that was something you would see today.
Right, and
yeah,
the encampment of people living there in a place, we see that in our cities today.
And I don't want to create drama where there isn't drama. I'm not saying that this is a discussion I've seen online or anything. But do you think that there are people who are like, this is pro-immigration propaganda? You know,
honestly, I haven't seen anything.
Seen anything like that. But I just,
You know, in my other life, I have some small degree of knowledge and experience to related to the immigration system and the history of immigration in the United States. In any way, not I can't
that
speak
was,
to other
that
places.
That was really cryptic. you obfuscated.
All I'm saying is I'm not somebody without some. I'm trying to find a non-arrogant way of saying this.
That I know my shit.
That I know some stuff about this area at a higher than layperson level.
I've been to school and all.
And so it was interesting to see this portrayed here, and particularly interesting to see that this, along with the sanctuary district concept, we're now living that. We're living what Deep Space Nine was talking about. It was prescient in that way. It's not that that stuff didn't exist at those times either, but to make it a plot point, I think was very
plot
interesting.
Plot point.
Now, no doubt, I'm sure next episode, we're going to see the grand escape of Rios and Seven or Rafi. Somebody will, they'll help them and it'll be a fun thing getting away, and they'll let the other immigrants that were caught free them. And
because nobody likes ICE.
Yeah, they suck. So good old fashioned. Excellent Star Trek style inclusion of contemporary stuff. It's just instead of being 2 decades in the future, it's 2 years in the future, and it's today. It's just today. They're just showing stuff that happens just today.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Seeing that ICE stuff like next to Star in like the middle of Star Trek stuff like that is always a little jarring. Not in a bad way, but in a like whoa.
When Star Trek does that, that's always great. Sometimes they use metaphors, and sometimes they just straight up show you the actual thing.
Sometimes there's Gary Seven,
and sometimes there's Gary Seven. Sometimes there's Gary Mitchell.
Gary Shandling. There's no Gary Shandling.
Gary Seven.
That kid, he was all wanting about that cookie.
His name was Ricardo.
Ricardo, and when he got a cookie. Did you notice that he got a cookie? When he brought it down, you saw Teresa.
I'm sure that kid gets plenty of fucking cookies.
Well, I'm saying, from what we've seen,
but he wanted the whole plate.
So Rios was going to give the kid that plate of cookies,
and then
Teresa took it. But if you watch, the kid still got a cookie. He still got a cookie. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
So
he grabs one off.
So, but in a minute later, when he's walking by, he says, "I just wanted one cookie. I don't see why it's such a big deal." You know, but the kid got a cookie. So what's his beef?
I don't know. I'd have to look back because I don't have a specific recollection of the kid getting a cookie.
Just clapping back.
It's one of those peanut butter with the chocolate kiss dots on top.
It's not that I don't trust you. Except the cookie was all huge and flat.
I thought it was normal sized. I didn't notice. Was it a big flat cookie?
It was a big flat cookie.
There was like seven small cookies.
It was like a normal cookie.
How many cookies did you see, Jesse?
But if you're talking about
the, like the new Rorschach
the type of cookie with the Hershey Kiss in the middle is a smaller cookie.
Yeah, and that's what I saw. How many cookies did you see?
I saw a big flat cookie.
You saw one cookie?
No, there's like seven.
There's like seven. Yeah, there's like seven.
It was a large plate of large cookies.
No, but how many did you see?
I wasn't counting cookies.
I wasn't counting cookies. That's how I get to sleep at night, because I count cookies.
I don't count cookies.
After a night of partying, I count my cookies after I toss them all over the toilet.
Gross.
Look, Patrick and I both saw like seven cookies.
Well, you guys both were sitting around counting cookies.
I'm not counting the cookies. That's an estimate based off of like a visual memory.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we've spent too much time on this cookie business.
Yeah, I think okay.
I'm not a numbers guy.
All right, I'll blow your minds. We haven't done enough mind blowing in this episode. So here's a mind blower. I'm not guaranteeing a mind blow, but here's hoping for a mind blow. So Teresa's son Ricardo, he wants to watch Rick and Morty.
Right, he does.
Now, Rick and Morty, in addition to being a show that deals with all sorts of crazy time travel shenanigans, because they hate time travel, but that's a whole different thing. It's not the first time we've had a contemporary television show mentioned in a Star Trek episode. I'm sure there are multiple examples, but what first came to my mind was in Enterprise's Carbon Creek, which was an episode, we discussed that in episode 77 of the podcast. That was a really good episode of the podcast. So Carbon Creek.
You think 77. You don't think, you know.
Well, now I know because I look back at my notes. I remembered 77 and now I looked at my notes and I've confirmed 77. Okay. Number 77.
It's on the website.
The Vulcan, one of the Vulcans in Carbon Creek, who's hanging out back in the olden days of, 1950s, Mestral, he wants to watch I Love Lucy. So he mentioned I Love Lucy, which was on the TV at the time, right? And who is one of the main characters in I Love Lucy?
Ricky Ricardo?
Ricky Ricardo.
Oh.
Ricardo, the kid, wants to watch Rick and Morty, and Mestral wanted to watch I Love Lucy with Ricky Ricardo.
Do you think they did that on purpose?
No, but they might have. They might have. I don't think so, but they might have. But Mestral has been one of the people, you know, getting back to that, you know, earlier we said we discussed who we think the watcher might be. Some people have said. Some people have said, it's just Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan because we know she's been hanging out in Earth. She was in San Francisco in the 1800s. So maybe she's down in L.A. now. But Mestral was one of the people suggested.
And she was in L.A. in the episode of Picard.
Yeah. Yeah, she's in L.A. now.
That's why I was thinking.
But Mestral was suggested as another candidate, the Vulcan, because he came to Earth in the 50s to hang out, and he didn't go back with his friends. He wanted to hang out and watch the Earthlings.
Watch you watch them.
He wanted to watch you watch them. So that's a possibility.
That would be fun.
The Guardian of Forever guy.
That guy is always there. Q could always be there. But then there's also... Gary Seven is another one. He came to Earth and he knows about time travel and aliens and shit because he was sent to Earth specifically to help keep track of things. So mind blown. I don't know, but it
gives me something to think about. That's for sure, Patrick.
Especially that whole Ricky Ricardo and Ricardo business.
Yeah, it's like Bill Murray and Lorenzo Music and the whole Ghostbusters Garfield connection.
I've noticed you've been referencing that a lot.
You
lately.
Like this?
It's just really neat.
It's a neat showing thing. Off that you know the name Lorenzo Music.
I just like to say Lorenzo.
It's
Music.
A mental adventure.
But it definitely all centers around Lorenzo Music.
I mean, definitely.
How wouldn't it? A meant adventure. When Rios was telling Teresa that story about the flight simulator,
it was an awesome story.
Yeah, it was. And he goes, I knew she was proud. And she said, and then go, and she's like, cool story. Now, is this going to be completed later? Is it going to be a situation where Teresa's going to be dying and he says it to save her? Or what more likely is the case is Rios is going to be dying and she asks him to tell her to finish the story, right? She's dying and she's like, no, you can't fall asleep because we all know every time you're in danger, if you fall asleep, that means you're going to die, right? Is that true in real life too? Because if you're super injured and you fall asleep, they always say, don't fall asleep, stay with me.
If you have a concussion. If you have a
concussion.
So, but they treat it in shows and stuff all the time. Like, just stay. They do it for drug overdoses too. I've noticed. Maybe drug overdoses are similar. Where if you fall asleep, I don't know.
I ain't a doctor.
Anyways,
neither one of them's gonna
Teresa's
die.
A doctor. Teresa's a doctor. She would know.
But they're probably. I'll tell you.
I think I know. I think I know how it's gonna resolve.
So I'm just saying.
I have a guess.
So Rios is gonna be like dying, and she's like, "Don't fall asleep on me. Tell me the story. Finish the story." He'd be like, "What story? About the flight simulator?" And you thought, "I thought you didn't care about that." She's like, "I was listening the whole time."
No, okay.
That would be funny if that.
I think how it's going to resolve. I don't know the specifics, but I think how it's going to resolve is that when he explains what his mother told him when she was so proud of him, it's going to be some colloquial phrase, and then Teresa is going to realize, hey, that's something I always say, and then Rios is going to find out that Teresa is Rios' great, 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 great grandmother.
Is this after they kissed already?
I don't know that they're gonna kiss.
I'm not talking about anything sexual, just kiss.
No, I don't know.
Well, I mean, as sexual as Luke and Leia.
As sexual as Luke and Leia?
When they kissed. Would you think that was a sexual kiss?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So
they just George Lucas didn't know they were brother and sister yet because he hadn't made that up yet.
Right.
Because he's a fucking liar. I mean, I like Star Wars, but George Lucas is a fucking liar.
Yeah.
Good stories though. Good tales.
All
right. Anything else? Right, any other thoughts on The Watcher? Any other ideas in The Watcher? You know, Gary,
I have no idea.
I watched you watch.
Could it be some random new person?
Yeah, it probably will.
Maybe
be,
it's Soju.
Oh, what,
maybe
it's Soju. Could it be Sarah Silverman's character from the Voyager episode?
That would be awesome.
From 1996.
See, these kinds of cameos is something that like I simultaneously like really want, but I also don't want because it's like, you know, careful what you wish for.
Maybe
but
it's
it would
Barkley.
Be. It, but if they did it right, it would be such a cool tickle. I'd feel so tickled in my tickle.
Maybe it's T.J. Hooker.
Early ozone deterioration. Why is there early ozone deterioration? I thought we fixed that problem in like the early 90s.
We haven't fixed it yet.
Yeah, we.
Well, we got it better.
No, we did sort of fix it, but the problem is it's a lagging indicator because the stuff, the CFCs that go up, they stick around forever.
Yeah,
and that's the problem.
But I would
so they cause the problem for long after we stopped putting them in the air.
Okay, I was just thinking she could glasses half full kind of way. She could have said it is like. Oh, the ozone is improving.
But they wouldn't know that because they have one point of reference.
They use stochastic...
they don't have a time series. They don't have time series data.
They use statistical calculated stochastic analysis.
I think in this case, it's as simple as they don't have a time series data set. They only have a single point in time reference for the
data. Maybe they can tell by the way the atoms are shaped that they're getting stronger as opposed to weaker.
I don't think they probably don't.
I don't think that's how atoms work.
I don't think they know a ton about that time period because it's like, you know, like the time prior to some sort of catastrophic shit
prior to
down.
World War III.
World War III.
It's like
they're always going back to that time period and wondering how we didn't get to war sooner.
Yeah.
There was some debate on where they and some confusion online about where they crash land because they're all at first saying like, well, we've got to go to LA, and then Picard's like, no, we got to go. We'll go here, and he puts in some new coordinates.
I thought they were going to go to his vineyard.
They did. They went to his vineyard, but it's not 100% clear, and I understand why people could be confused by it, but there are a couple things that suggest that that's definitely Chateau Picard where they decide to crash land. First is the context clue, because Picard says, no, we're going to go home, right? And home for him is Chateau Picard,
home
right?
For him.
So that's the context clue.
I thought
home
it was just like him. The desert outside of LA.
Logic says that Picard knows with certainty that the area around Chateau Picard is isolated with woods and stuff. Like, he knows that area, and he knows that in 2024 it would be woods and stuff. Like, he knows that he doesn't know the rest of the planet, what the situation is going to be like anywhere, because it's so far back in time.
Right. But
that place, he knows how old the trees are.
He's probably been that
stuff.
Way for several centuries.
Why don't they ever park their ship underwater and then just transport in and out?
I'm sure they do that sometimes. It's like Star Trek Beyond.
Sure, they do
that
sometimes.
But then I also did a frame by frame analysis, and when
you saw the tape,
I loaded up the tape, and out the view screen of the La Serena after they've crashed, it's dimly lit, it's dark, but the mountains, the fields, and the building in the background, they all match up with Chateau Picard. So I think we can pretty much put that minor internet mystery
Picardy thirds
to bed.
Picardy third.
Anything else? Anything else to discuss about this otherwise computer, pretty exciting episode?
Computer, dictate the file log. Shit, I stole from the Borg Queen.
Yeah.
That was a...
Sorry, that's fine.
I just wanted to say, remember that line? It was really awesome.
It was,
you remember
it was
that? Awesome. Jesse, you remember that?
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. I thought it worked. I thought it was another line that could have...
She's got good that lines been,
it could have been
season,
cheesy.
Man.
It could have come off cheesy and stupid, could've but it worked.
It could have been sleazy, but it worked.
Maybe people disagree with me, but you know
she
what?
She had good That's lines your last season. She's got better lines this season.
Yeah. She's got better motivations, or better.
Yeah, well, she's not being controlled by the fucking
better answers
Oshkosh
to emotions.
Bagosh.
Kawam yeah. a lot. The Zatvash.
Zatvash.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, okay.
I guess that does it for us this week
and concludes our 3 weeks of producing two podcast episodes for you, our adoring audience.
Next week's going to seem like a breeze.
It's going to be such a breeze next week.
We'll just do an extra long one.
Only be Star Trek Picard.
Only be. We start a podcast called Only Be Star Trek 3, and we just keep talking about Star Trek 3.
Don't worry, we're not going to do that. We haven't workshopped that. Normally, we get together during the week and we have Zoom meetings.
How many Star Trek movies are there total? There's like nine.
There's
more
two.
Than that, dude.
There's two.
There's two Star Trek movies?
You got Star Trek the Motion Picture. You got Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. You got Star Trek III, The Switch for Spock.
There's 10.
You've got Star Trek IV,
There's only
The
like
Voyage
two
Home.
That you count.
You've got Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. You've got Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. You got Star Trek VII, Generations.
Right. There's 10.
You got Star Trek VIII, which is First Contact. Star Trek IX, which is Insurrection. You got Star Trek X, which is Nemesis.
Yeah, so, and so.
Then you've
right,
got.
Right, well,
you Trace, J.J. Abrams movies. Star Trek, just plain old Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Then you got Star Trek Into Darkness. And then you got Star Trek Beyond. And then you have a new one coming out. So soon there'll be 14 movies.
Well, I was pretty close when I meant the nine.
You're pretty close when you said nine.
Because that was like 10.
But there's 13.
That's the Kelvin
but that's the Kelvin universe. I mean, not saying it's not Star Trek, but I'm just saying.
All right. This guy's getting political over here. You're getting political. Right.
I was going to say, like, if there were, we could just do a podcast every day, and each day is dedicated to just doing that one movie every time. So, like, every Monday we could do Star Trek 1, and every Tuesday we could do Star Trek 2, and then 3. But there's more than 7 Star Trek, so that idea doesn't work. I was going to say a Star Trek for every day of the week, and we just review the same movie over and over again, but different ones each day.
I feel you.
I don't think we should do that.
I'm glad. All right. We'll workshop this during our weekly Zoom meetings to figure it all out.
Zoom meetings.
So otherwise, that'll do it for us this week. If you would like to get in contact with us via the social media, you can find us at It's Got Star Trek on Twitter, on Instagram.
At hashtag us to give us some twites.
At
You can find us searching It's Got Star Trek in all sorts of other places like Facebook and YouTube.
Apple
and
Snot
you can
Blast.
Subscribe on
Did you
Apple
say Snot
Podcast.
Blast? Apple Snot Blast? Is that what you said?
Snapple Snot Blast.
It's Apple Podcasts.
He said Apple Snot Blast.
Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the business. And you can rate and review, and you can smash things and do all the things.
Just make sure you smash
you know,
lots of
you
things.
You can do the thing where the people smash are all it. Like, hey, guys. Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. Smash that subscribe button.
Okay.
Rate and review. Give us money. Hey, guys. Give us money. You don't need to give us money. We don't need it. But if you want to give us money, we'll take it. But we don't need it.
We wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. We'd just put it in a bucket. We'd just get a bucket full of money. If you would like to submit some money to us.
Send it to our bucket.
Just write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
We need to get one of those VPN companies to like so we can promote their VPN. Yeah. That's what they all do is they promote their VPN.
They all do.
That's all that they.
They
for a while
other podcasters
for
those,
other
they
people.
Yeah
those people for a while they, those podcasters. For a while they were promoting loot crate games but then like but
that
then,
fell out of favor
because
along with the mattresses and the silky smooth underwear.
And the my
the
pillows.
MeUndies, the MeUndies. No,
oh, the
yeah.
I have some MeUndies. They're not bad.
No, MeUndies are great, but the commercials, you don't hear them anymore.
That's true. That's a good point. That is weird.
Now the commercials are all like, they got smart with podcast commercials, so they're all like dynamically inserted, so everyone gets different commercials now.
Yeah.
So when I download podcasts, I get commercials for like weapons systems and things like that, because I live in D.C.
Oh.
I want to get DC. More MeUndies. Why? Maybe so. Someone out there is getting MeUndies commercials. I like my MeUndies. I think they're good. I like them. They're comfortable.
Well, I think I'll order them,
I don't know
too.
About that whole three
now,
times.
You're sure this isn't an ad? This is
no, it's not a paid
verging
ad.
On an ad.
I mean, it is three times softer than cotton. Like, I don't even know what what does that even mean? It's like, sure, it's a thin piece of fabric. I don't know what three criteria, times softer than cotton.
I don't know what criteria they use. Yeah. I don't know if there's a standard measurement of softness. Presumably there is.
But they're comfy.
There's
a standard
measurement of hardness.
I like the way they feel around my bits.
All right. All right. So everyone go out there and buy MeUndies and then
Glaubitz's bits.
Dan's Glaubitz.
Go to MeUndies.com. MeUndies.com.
Did you say MeUndies gonna come? Is that what you said, Patrick?
No, I did. I did misspeak and I said MeUndies.com, but I didn't do it for the purpose of humor. It was an accident. I was going to say the joke I was trying to make was MeUndies.com/ It's Got Star Trek, which it's not going to do anything because we're not doing an ad for MeUndies.com, even though it increasingly sounds like we are.
You said accident like Mitch Hedberg would have said accident.
How would he say accident?
He would just say like, it was an accident. Accident.
I was walking down the street with my friend and he said, I hear music. And I said, that's how I receive it too.
Classic Mitch Hedberg.
All right. That's enough podcasting for tonight.
Turkey, we'll be yourself.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You had a colleague, tall, round.
Kevin?
Yes, Kevin. He led us up there on our first date, and we just got engaged. And we were hoping to recreate the cellular photograph.
Just call the picture.
And you seem like someone with sufficient power and authority to break a rule. I mean, you can't let Kevin be funner than you.
Ew.
Kevin is not funner than me.